Fred Film Radio, Turin Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 38th Torino Film Festival. I'm in virtual company of Caddy Brady, who's here to present Wildfire in competition at the festival. So welcome on Fred.
Ciao.
Ciao, I like that. Ciao, buonasera. So first of all, how are you? Thank you so much for being
with
us.
Thank you. I'm good. I think like everyone in 2020, just taking each day as it comes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I asked, how are you? You know, normally you get to the point straight away, but now it's important even to ask normal questions like, yeah, how are you? So let's start talking about Wildfire. First of all, for our listeners, how would you describe the film? A tale of sisterhood intertwined with the reality of Northern Ireland, the troubles, Brexit, local and universal. I wouldn't know how to explain it.
Wow, I actually think that was beautifully explained. I think this really is a story about two sisters with a really intense bond. And they're coming to terms with the trauma in their past. But not only that, the film deals with the wider community, and it's also dealing with the repercussions of the past. And it's set in borderland Northern Ireland, present day. So it's really a family and a town in the wake of the Troubles and the legacy of the Troubles. And it really is a personal film before it's a political film. And it really deals with the, what will you do for love, and how far will you go for the ones that you believe in and you love?
I have to say that I really liked this idea of two girls, two sisters being called twins, even if they aren't, because it really makes you feel the connection if you haven't felt it already. Plus, it sets the tone of how painful must have been for one sister to be divided from the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a known saying, Irish twins, which is basically siblings that are born within a year of each other. And, you know, myself and my brother, there is 13 months between us. Wow. So we grew up very close, and we had the same friends. And, you know, as life happens, you know, everyone starts their own families. We started to drift away. So I know what it's like to have a really strong bond with a sibling. But with Wildfire, we really took it one step further. My mother is an identical twin. So, you know, I have a sense of really strong bonds and what it looks like. And when I had worked separately with these two actresses, you know, I had a unique bond with each of them. And I really wanted to see what would happen if, you know, what their bond would be like if they met each other. And really just to see what, you know, where you can go with intense bonds in terms of emotions, in terms of connection. And I really think at the heart of this film, it's dealing with intense bonds and, you know, the power of love, and really kind of protecting that person that you love. And that doesn't necessarily mean doing the right things, but that bond of love is so powerful and so universal. Doesn't matter where you are in the world.
Since you mentioned them, let's talk about Nora Jane Noon and Nika McGuigan, because I've read and heard that the film came to you like in an unusual way. So you started with them. Is that correct?
I mean, unlike most films, I started with the casting. And I was lucky enough to work with Nora Jane in two occasions, on two shorts, Small Change and Wasted. And then with Nika, I had worked with her on a TV series. And what it was about both these actresses, they had an incredible ability to be both vulnerable and fierce. And, you know, they didn't put it on in a way where it was like an actress sometimes puts on the mask of vulnerability or the bravado of courage. It was very genuine, raw. And, you know, you don't always come across people with that ability and the willingness to really go into those primal aspects. So, you know, to have come across two actors in my short lifetime that have both that ability, I thought, I have to see what happens here. So, of course, like, you know, I put them together, I sat back, and it was like electric. It's one of those moments in your life where you know you have something special, and like things have just divinely come together. And it was a case of, right, what can we do? How can I start building a story and a world around them? And, you know, they were very intuitive, intelligent, generous people to work with. And we began researching in terms of, you know, bringing our own sense of what it means to be a sibling, what it means to be a woman, and stories that were inspiring for us. And we talked about a documentary called Madness in the Fast Lane.
Mm.
And it was about a real event with two sisters who happened to be identical twins who had a shared psychosis. And without giving too much away, there was a real event that happened that these two sisters, there was quite an extreme event, and it's quite existential when you see what they did. And for us, we wanted to explore what might lead to that moment and the bond that might, you know, lead to that moment. And what is a shared psychosis? And we were lucky enough that I started working with Carlo Crestadine, an Italian producer.
Yes.
And I pitched the two girls, the clip from the documentary, had about 50 images, piece of music. And I was like, this is kind of the film I want to make. you know, that's it. And Carlo, you know, he's a very clever man. And he said, you know, this is going to be a very difficult film to make. But I'm on board and I'm really excited. And, you know, he got it. And it's incredible to have people in your life that believe you and believe the process, even if you're figuring it out. And we worked with a researcher. And over the years, we had the, you know, the chance to speak to psychiatrists, psychologists, even two sisters who had a shared psychosis. So we were really getting into the nitty gritty of what psychosis was, how it manifests, how it changes. But not only that, it felt important to bring the story back to something that felt true to me in terms of setting, which
yes,
made
yes,
sense to bring it to borderland Northern Ireland, where I'm from. And, you know, that's a place that, you know, it's, you know, I've always got that sense of, am I British? Am I Irish? You know, where do I belong? What is home? And the sense of the troubles. And this film really forced me to have a look at that and forced me to start asking questions in my own family about, you know, their understanding of the troubles and what it was like growing up. And you know, this film really starts to talk about that. And we came across a term called intergenerational trauma, which is basically a trauma that has been experienced in the past that cannot be understood, so it passes on to the next generation.
Yeah, you sort of inherit it.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, no. There's a psychological theory
yes.
about that. Yeah, I read that.
And, you know, because that became really important in terms of looking at psychosis, because psychosis often comes from trauma that's unresolved, and it's a transformative crisis is sometimes what it's called as well. And in, you know, other people would say it's a transformative crisis, which is just the body and the psyche trying to make sense of its story, as abstract as it is. And that became quite an interesting way of looking at it in terms of narrative and how the past somehow has to be dealt with. And I think that's, you know, incredibly important, you know, because we can't take things for granted that just because it's gone in the past and we've buried it, that it's somehow we've moved on. And that's really important now when you think of Brexit. You
yes,
know, when
yes.
we made this film, we had no idea Brexit was going to happen. It was unthinkable. And now here we are. The film is going out. We have no idea what has happened in the border. We don't even know what trauma might reawaken. And I hope not. But one thing is for sure, we can't take things for granted, and peace has been so painfully secured here, you know what I mean? And I think this film, you know, without looking too broad at it, it brings us right into the macro of a two sisters dynamic within a family, and the minutiae of that detail, and how that trauma is erupting within this family.
It feels to me, when you're telling me about the process, that it was a very functional process. Like, to I don't want to say that it doesn't seem that it's been difficult for you to have this story like intersect with history in a way, but from your words I feel that it was like a very fluent process. I mean, almost natural.
Yeah, I think probably a good way of describing it might be organic.
Organic,
and
yes.
In one sense, basically when we started with, you know, because I was starting with the two actresses' physicality and their strength of their physicality. So we were building the world and character around that. So already that's coming from a very physical, emotive place without applying any story. You know, you're beginning with that as the starting point. And as we start to research, you know, that started to give us a sense of what fiction that we needed to start to bring into the story in terms of backstory, in terms of, like, say, the trauma that might have happened within that family, starting to build those character plots so that we knew what might awaken in the present of the girl's narrative. But not only that, when we started looking at fiction, that would make us, that would spiral us out into going, okay, that's really interesting. Okay, let's take a look at how trauma would manifest with a parent who might be absent. How might that change the character dynamics? So what happened was fact started informing fiction, and the fiction we were looking at started informing what fact. So it became very organic and very to and fro. And by no means was it straightforward. I wish it was. I think when you work in such an organic way, it can bring you down many wrong avenues. Mm-hmm. But in somehow you have to go down that route in order to somehow carry some muscle and understand what you really need. So it's quite demanding. And unlike rehearsal for actors, you know, where you have the script, you have the scenes, here's the story beats, let's just rehearse how you're going to deliver it. Workshopping a script is entirely different. It's so demanding on actors because it requires them to 100% commit to the truth at the moment, because if they enter that moment in a way where they're holding back anything, you get a false story beat and that will lead to another false scene. So in a way, what you're workshopping doesn't become that useful. And what was very interesting in terms of our process on this, we allowed ourselves within the first year to have a 1 week residential where we went to, because we were based in London at the time, and we went to Ireland. We went to the wild west of Ireland. and you know, you're talking about the elements and the rain, and we rented a little house. And it was the three of us, and the producers came over a little bit later. But it allowed us to explore in real time some of the character moments that we were beginning to build. And one example was, I decided to workshop the moment where Kelly would come home for the first time. Mm. So what happened was we let Nora Jane, who played Lauren, leave the house for the day. And I said to Nico, who was playing Kelly, right, this is the house. You find your way into this house. And Nika, being Nika, she found an open window. She wedged herself through it and she broke into the house through the window. And it was fascinating. So myself and the researcher had the camera. We were documenting this. You know, she took off her muddy boots. She had a search in the cupboards. And then she fell asleep in the bedroom. And what happened then was Lauren came in a few hours later. And, you know, she's seen the muddy footprints. She's seen the food disturbed in the kitchen, and then she went down to the bedroom and seen her sleeping. And that was an incredibly powerful moment to witness, because she truthfully went there 100% committed to what it would be like to walk into a room and see your sister who you thought was dead at home sleeping. And there was such power in that moment that she didn't know whether to wake her or to just watch her. And witnessing that in terms of workshop, it made me trust the power of the small moments. And I really would wonder, if I was sitting down to write that moment, would I have trusted the smallness of that?
Yeah, I love that. And I love that scene. I have to say that's when I fell in love with the film, because I could really feel that. I never experienced something like that, but I could really feel that she didn't even want to touch her. Like, is she there? Is she really there? Mm-hmm. I mean, is she really back? Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that you've been asked this question before, but I can't help mentioning that Nika McGuigan is no longer with us. And I read that it happened while you were in post-production of the film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was in about halfway through the picture edit, and Nika had started to feel unwell, and she got the diagnosis of cancer, and within 5 weeks she died. So it was incredibly shocking, because we built this film over 5 years. You know, when you're workshopping like that, you get to know everything about each other, and it was incredibly special bond the three of us had. And having worked with Nika before in a TV series, like, you know, I felt like here I was on the cusp of really discovering a fantastic new talent and really excited about unleashing her to the cinematic world. And, you know, to be halfway through a picture edit and for her to be gone was just like horrifying. And it was incredibly difficult, because in one way the film deals with grief, this film, and here I was in the picture edit experiencing the biggest loss of my life, and it wasn't cathartic, it was just incredibly painful. But what, you know, after taking some time out, what became important was this film had to be finished, because she is so remarkable in this film. Yes. She's breathtaking, and I feel incredibly grateful that, you know, I've had that opportunity to launch her in a way. And I really feel that, you know, Nika was someone who really wore her heart on her sleeve, and she embraced the moment, and she would make you present by being so in the moment. And that's why I really hope people get to see this performance. I really hope people will just see how unique she was and the gift that she has left us with. So finishing this film, of course, is incredibly difficult and incredibly important, both for us, for her family, and for reaching people who this story needs to reach. You know, I really hope this film, yes, it's difficult in many ways. It deals with difficult themes in terms of trauma and family relations, but it's universal in terms of connection and the power of love and the power of family.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And so, Kelly, one last thing. What do you expect from this, like, experience at Torino Film Festival, since you can't be there, but you're there, like, emotionally?
I really hope that the people who need to see this film find this film. And I really trust that, you know... My producer is Italian, my editor is Italian, and I think, you know, we have real shared sensibilities, and I love the passion and soul of Italians, and I really hope there is something in this story that speaks to the Italian audience that will get to see this film.
I totally agree. I think we can really connect. So, good luck with Wildfire at the 38th Torino Film Festival. Kelly Brady, thank you so much for being with us, and I really hope to meet you in person next time.
Yes.
And we've been talking to Kelly Brady, director of Wildfire, screening in competition at 38th Torino Film Festival, and this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.